Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Brian Lin. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Dubai is the top center for gold trade in the Middle East. In Dubai's old gold market, buyers from around the world argue over prices for jewelry. But in other parts of the United Arab Emirates, the metal is becoming important in financial engineering. A local startup company is offering a gold-backed cryptocurrency. The company, called OneGram, opened last year. Its offer is part of efforts to persuade Muslims that cryptocurrency investments are acceptable under Islamic law. The worldwide interest in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies has moved into the Gulf and Southeast Asia, the main centers of Islamic finance. But many Muslims are uneasy with such investments because they are products of financial engineering and objects of risk. Islamic teachings ban interest payments. These teachings note the importance of real economic activity based on physical possessions, but disapprove of monetary speculation. That has led to a debate among Islamic experts over whether cryptocurrencies are religiously permissible. Cryptocurrency companies are seeking ways to influence the debate. They have released products based on physical objects, such as gold, that are recognized by Islamic advisors. OneGram says each one of its cryptocurrency units is backed by at least a gram of physical gold stored in a safe place. The idea is to limit speculation. Gold was among the first forms of money in Islamic societies, said Ibrahim Mohammed, the Briton who founded the company with other investors last year. To date, tens of millions of dollars worth of the currency have been offered for sale. About 60% of the planned number of coins remains to be sold. OneGram hopes to issue them all before listing them on financial exchanges around the end of May. OneGram received a ruling that its cryptocurrency is acceptable under Islamic teachings from Dubai-based Al Mali Consulting. It is one of many businesses that offer their opinion on whether financial products meet Islamic teachings. In Malaysia, Hello Gold offered its first gold-backed cryptocurrency in October after receiving approval from Islamic experts at Kuala Lumpur-based Amani Advisors. Manuel Ho, Hello Gold's chief marketing officer, said its coin was Islamic, as buying and selling takes place within a defined period, making the currency less speculative. Only about 20-30% of banking in the Gulf and Southeast Asia follows Islamic teachings. Many Muslims use more traditional finance if it offers higher rates of return or ease. But the issue of religious permissibility is important and could decide whether Islamic banks and financial businesses use cryptocurrencies. One of the biggest difficulties is that there is so much to talk about, said Ziad Mohamed of HSBC Amana in Malaysia. Mohamed chairs a committee that oversees Islamic financing. He added that no one knows the future of cryptocurrencies. In other countries, Islamic experts have yet to rule on whether cryptocurrencies are permissible. Several international groups have suggested rules for Islamic finance, but none has the power to fully enforce them. Many governments are worried about the possibility of market instability, but are unwilling to lose the chance of profiting from the new technology. The Saudi Arabian and UAE central banks warned their citizens about the risks of trading Bitcoin, but have not banned them. That leaves Islamic investors to choose between sometimes conflicting judgments by experts at advisory services and at universities. One of the earliest rulings came in 2014 when California-based professor Manzoor Kaf, a writer of Islamic finance books, called Bitcoin an acceptable form of exchange. Since then, Islamic experts in South Africa have ruled in support of cryptocurrencies. Those experts argue they have become socially acceptable and commonly used, said Mohamed. Another problem is that many Islamic experts find it difficult to understand the complexities of digital currencies, said Harris Irfan, managing director of Cordoba Capital in London. He says investors should be careful when listening to the experts because that part of Islamic law is very complex. Mohamed said there has been some level of agreement that cryptocurrencies are a form of wealth, a move toward acceptance. But experts have yet to rule on whether cryptocurrencies are, in fact, a form of wealth. This is important for Islamic tax payments, called zakat, and for passing down wealth from one generation to the next. I'm Susan Shand.
Facebook published detailed guidelines Tuesday for what users can and cannot post on the social media service. Earlier this month, lawmakers called on Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg to appear in Congress. They demanded that his company take more steps to protect the privacy of its users. Some even raised the possibility of regulating the social media service. Most of the newly announced guidelines, which Facebook calls community standards, have already been in place. But it is the first time Facebook has publicly shared complete and detailed information about all its restrictions on user content. About 7,600 Facebook moderators use the guidelines in examining Facebook content. The employees work in 40 languages. Facebook says its goal is to answer every report of possible content violation within 24 hours. Facebook removes material that violates the rules. In some cases, Facebook employees also contact police or other officials to investigate dangerous situations or possible crimes. The guidelines for posting content cover many areas. These include hate speech, violent threats or incitement of violence, self-harm, and human trafficking. Monica Bickert is head of global policy management at Facebook. She told reporters that the company felt it was important to be more open about its operations and totally clear about its user rules. You should, when you come to Facebook, understand where we draw these lines and what's okay and what's not okay, Bickert said. She added that the guidelines themselves are always being re-examined and the latest changes are sent to employees weekly. The guidelines demonstrate how complex and difficult decisions on restricting content can be. For example, Bickert said there are community standards that differ widely in nations across the world. Another complex issue is how moderators decide how and when expressions of ideas and opinions violate policy. For example, the Facebook guidelines permit a user to share another person's hate speech, but only if it is done for the purpose of raising awareness or educating others. Users sharing such content must clearly show such purpose, or moderators will remove the content. Facebook says comments concerning violence must also be carefully examined in an effort to prevent real threats. The guidelines say that many times people express their disagreement by threatening or calling for violence in non-serious ways. The moderators have to consider the language, context, and details of posts in order to separate non-serious statements from threatening statements. Facebook says moderators call law enforcement when they believe there is a real risk of physical harm. In addition to human moderators, Facebook also uses artificial intelligence, or AI, in an effort to find content violations. Facebook says the machines can help identify some pieces of banned material. But it says they are not equipped to judge the history and context related to it. It is also difficult for AI to correctly identify humor as well as a human can. Facebook also announced that people will now be permitted to appeal decisions about the removal of individual photos, videos, or posts. Until now, appeals could be launched only over the removal of whole accounts, groups, or pages. The service is also beginning to provide exact reasons for content removal action. The new guideline information was released 1 week after Facebook announced a major change to its privacy settings. The change makes it easier for people to approve or deny the company permission to use different kinds of user data. Everyone, no matter where they live, will be asked to review important information about how Facebook uses data and make choices about their privacy on Facebook, the company said in a post on its website. Users now will be asked directly whether they want Facebook to block facial recognition, some kinds of targeted advertising, or personal information. The European Union forced the enactment of those changes. Facebook said its new privacy protections went into effect in Europe last week, but will be extended to users worldwide in the future. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In our last program, we told you the story of the Statue of Liberty. It was given to the United States by the people of France. Lady Liberty holds a bright torch high over the harbor of New York City. Millions of immigrants coming to America passed the statue as ships carried them to the Immigration Processing Center on Ellis Island. Leo Scully and Morris Joyce tell the story of immigration in the United States during the 1800s.
American life was changing, and it was changing quickly. Before 1860, the United States had an agricultural economy. After 1860, the country began to change from an agricultural to an industrial economy. In 1860, American shops and factories produced less than $2,000 million worth of goods. 30 years later, in 1890, American factories produced $10,000 million worth. By then, more than 5 million persons were working in factories and mines. Another 3 million had jobs in the building industries and transportation.
Year after year, production continued to increase, and the size of the industrial labor force continued to grow. A great many of the new industrial workers came from American farms. Farm work was hard, and the pay was low. Young men left the family farms as soon as they could. They went to towns and cities to look for an easier and better way of life. Many of them found it in the factories. A young man who worked hard and learned new skills could rise quickly to better and better jobs. This was not only true for farmers, but also for immigrants who came to the United States from foreign countries. They came from many different lands and for many different reasons, but all came with the same hope for a better life in a new world.
In the 1850s, America's Industrial Revolution was just beginning. Factories needed skilled workers, men who knew how to do all the necessary jobs. Factory owners offered high pay to workers who had these skills. British workers had them. Many had spent years in British factories. Pay was poor in Britain, and these skilled workers could get much more money in America. So many of them came, hundreds of thousands. Some factories, even some industries, seemed completely British.
Cloth factories in Falls River, Massachusetts, were filled with young men from Lancashire, England. Most of the workers in the shipyards of San Francisco were from Scotland. Many of the coal miners in America were men from the British mines in Wales. Many were farmers who came to America because they could get land for nothing. They could build new farms for themselves in the rich land of the American West.
One of the best liked songs in Britain then was a song about the better life in America. Its name, To the West. Its words helped many men decide to make the move to America. To the west, to the land of the free, where mighty Missouri rolls down to the sea, where a man is a man if he's willing to toil, and the poorest may harvest the fruits of the soil, where the young may exult and the aged may rest, away, far away, to the land of the west.
To another group of immigrants, America was the last hope. Ireland in the 1840s suffered one crop failure after another. Hungry men had to leave. In 1850 alone, more than 117,000 people came to the United States from Ireland. Most had no money and little education. To those men and women, America was a magic name.
Throughout Europe, when times were hard, people talked of going to America. In some countries, organizations were formed to help people emigrate to the United States. A Polish farmer wrote to such an organization in Warsaw. I want to go to America, but I have no money. I have nothing but the 10 fingers of my hands, a wife, and 9 children. I have no work at all, although I am strong and healthy and only 45 years old. I have been to many towns and cities in Poland. Wherever I could go. Nowhere could I earn much money. I wish to work, but what can I do? I will not steal, and I have no work. So I beg you to accept me for a journey to America.
As the years passed, fewer people were moving to America for a better job. Most were coming now for any job at all. Work was hard to find in any of the cities in Europe. A British lawmaker told Parliament in 1870 that Englishmen were leaving their country not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They could not find work at home. He said that even as he spoke, hundreds were dying of hunger in London and other British cities. They were victims of the new revolution in agriculture and industry. Small family farms were disappearing. In their places, rose large modern farms that could produce much more. New machines took the place of men, and millions of farmers had to look for other work. Some found it in the factories. Industry was growing quickly, but not quickly enough to give jobs to all the farmers out of work.
In the next 10 years, millions of people made the move from Britain, Germany, and the Scandinavian countries. But then, as industry in those countries grew larger and more jobs opened, the flood of immigration began to slow. The immigrants now were coming from southern and eastern Europe. Anti-Jewish feeling swept Russia and Poland. Violence against Jews caused many of them to move to America. In the late 1880s, cholera spread through much of southern Italy. Fear of the disease led many families to leave for the United States. Others left when their governments began building up strong armies. Young men who did not want to be soldiers often escaped by moving to America. Big armies were costly, and many people left because they did not want to pay the high taxes. Whatever the reason, people continued to immigrate to the United States.
These new immigrants were not like those who came earlier. These new immigrants had no skills. Most were unable to read or write. Factory owners found that these Eastern and Southern Europeans were hard workers. They did not protest because the work was hard and the pay was low. They did not demand better working conditions. They did not join unions or strike. Factory owners began to replace higher-paid American and British workers with the new immigrants. Business leaders wanted more of the new workers. They urged the immigrants to write letters to their friends and relatives in the old country. Tell them to come to America, that there are plenty of jobs.
Letters from America brought many more immigrants. The big steamship companies also helped industry to get more of the new workers. They paid thousands of agents throughout Europe to sell tickets for the trip to America. Their efforts meant that steamships bringing grain to Europe could return to America filled with immigrants. They came by the hundreds of thousands, people of all religions from all across Europe. Many remained in New York and other eastern cities, but many others moved westward. They took jobs in the steel factories of Pennsylvania and the coal mines of West Virginia. They worked in the lumber camps of Michigan and in the stockyards and meat packing plants of Chicago.
Within a few years, foreign-born workers held most of the unskilled jobs in many American industries. American workers began to protest. They demanded an end to the flood of immigration. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.